In a world of Democrats,
there will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
And Republicans,
I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system.
You need a voice of liberty. Look no further. You found it. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome to the Tom Woods Show, episode 319. Ian Freeman joins us today. Ian is the owner and host of Free Talk Live, and he's also the creator of FreeKeen.com, a website talking about all the activism going on in Keene, New Hampshire. Because Ian is part of the Free State Project. We've talked about that previously on the show. Before we get to Ian, let me remind you, of course, I have a new book, and it's called Real Dissent, A Libertarian Sets Fire to the Index Card of Allowable Opinion. If you enjoy this show, then that book is for you. Check it out at realdissent.com, and you can get the audiobook version with me reading it via the offer you'll find through tomwoodsaudio.com. Ian Freeman, welcome to the show.
Tom, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
I came up with the idea of having you because I was prodded by somebody on Twitter who said, why don't you have Ian Freeman on? I thought, well, you know, as a matter of fact, that is a good idea. Do you have any suggestions for topics? And he gave me a list of like a dozen things we could talk about because of all the things you do. And I thought, this is my kind of guy. You know, he's got a million irons in the fire. He's doing everything possible. One of them's bound to work. That's my view. If I do enough things, at least one of them's got to work. So I want to start off by letting people know about the what I consider to be your really, really big project, super successful, which is Free Talk Live, which people can visit at freetalklive.com. And I'll have and everything we're talking about that you're doing, I'll link to on the show notes page. This is episode 319, so it'll be tomwoods.com/319. Tell us about Free Talk Live.
Well, it's an open phones panel discussion talk radio program that appears on over 150 radio stations. So I mean, I guess pause to take that in for a moment for those of you who aren't familiar with it. There's actually voluntarists, you know, real libertarians that are on the air in 150 licensed AM, FM radio stations across the United States, even as far away as Guam and the Virgin Islands. So there's a lot of people out there hearing the message of liberty on a nightly basis because we do the show 7 nights a week. So some stations will take us, you know, 1 night a week. Some of them will take us all 7. But either way, we are getting the ideas of freedom out there, and it's a pretty exciting thing to do. We've been doing it for actually more than a decade, and we have a lot of fun with it.
And it's done very well. And of course, the idea, at least what my understanding is, anybody can call in and talk about anything. Do you have call screeners? How does that work?
Now, for better or for worse, sometimes that rule can result in some pretty awful callers. We try to get rid of them as quickly as possible, but sometimes it can really result in just some gold callers that otherwise would get screened out on any other talk show. Like, you know, like a good crazy call. That guy would never get on the air on, you know, Sean Hannity or something like that. But we'll let him on and we'll play with him and have a good time. So it's not all about liberty because it is an open phone show. So, you know, we'll end up talking about personal, you know, issues like self-improvement, for instance, as well as news of the day and things like that. So I don't know if I answered your question.
Well, did you market the show actively and aggressively to try to get it out to radio stations? Did they approach you? How did that happen?
Yes, I marketed the show. So basically, it's kind of like almost a two-man operation. It's a little larger than that now, but that's basically what it was for most of its existence. Mark Edge is my co-host. He does the sales end of the operation, meaning contacting potential clients to come on and advertise on Free Talk Live. And then I handle the affiliate relations end, which means contacting potential stations to bring them on as affiliates. So between the two of us, we managed to operate a syndicated, nationally, you know, available radio show.
Yeah, that's amazing to me. I mean, that and you've reached a ton of people. It's wonderful. You know, today I'm not even sure this is completely related, but this is kind of stream of consciousness show. Maybe I was on Twitter just doing what I have to do. I'm on Twitter because I have to be, basically. I still haven't quite gotten how to really make Twitter click, but I have a lot of followers and I have some fun with it. But I guess I had followed somebody in the DC libertarian world. And so now I'm getting all these terrible recommendations for other people I might follow. And this one person in particular, I don't want to mention names. I don't want to make this about personalities, but in his little description, they allow you 140 characters to describe yourself. And the first thing he says about himself is reasonable libertarian. Like, I just can't stand these people. What does that mean about the rest of it? You know, I am proudly an unreasonable libertarian. I unreasonably stick to the non-aggression principle, you know?
What do you expect from somebody in D.C., I guess?
Yeah, really. I know. So if you want to get real live libertarianism with no apologies and no mealy-mouthed anything, then definitely check out Free Talk Live.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've been taken off the air on radio stations because of our opinion.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Whereas when have these people ever been taken off anything? Of course, when have they ever been on the radio? I mean,
right.
These people have, you know, billion-dollar budgets, and they haven't done, in my opinion, they haven't done 1/100th what you guys have done.
Yeah, I mean, we don't do Free Talk Live for, you know, the commercial success. It's not really particularly
right,
commercially
right.
successful. It's more of a labor of love. It's more of an activist project, but we've managed to make it entertaining enough to where stations do want to pick up the show. And it is unique. It's almost unique. There's another good one out there called Freedom Fiends. Michael Dean and his crew, they've sort of emulated the Free Talk Live model, and they're on over 30 stations now. So we were sort of the first ones, and now we've seen there's another show, which hopefully we'll see 10 more within the next decade on real radio stations around the country.
Yeah, that's really wonderful to hear. It's funny, I had a recent episode going over the best music of 2014, because I'm very interested in progressive rock. And at the end of the episode, we realized that pretty much all the bands we've listed are people who do this in their spare time. Like, they have real jobs during the day. But they do the music because they love it, and I get the sense that that's kind of like your relationship with Free Talk Live.
Except I'm glad I don't have a real job.
That's right. I sometimes wonder, but people come up to me and say, what do you do for a living? I don't even know what to tell them. Like, I don't know. I blog. I have a show. I don't even know. Somehow I'm putting food on the table. All right, let's talk now about some of the activities that go on in New Hampshire. You are part of the Free State Project, although there's kind of a weird dynamic because with libertarians, you always have people of, you know, a diverse array of perspectives, even within the movement, so-called. So you have people who are trying to affect change through the political process, and you have people trying to affect change through all different other means. Let's talk about what you do in particular. Now, you actually ran for governor on the Democratic Party. Can you talk about that? Because I started to listen. Unfortunately, the acoustics were very bad, but I started to listen to your speech at, I guess, a gubernatorial debate, and it was a speech the likes of which these people have never heard in their lives.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so you're right. The room audio, unfortunately, wasn't ideal, but so I got to give a speech because the governor, the incumbent at the time, Maggie Hassan, who has now been reelected, she refused to debate me as well as the other lady that was running. So there were three candidates in the Democratic primary, including myself. And she refused to debate as well as the other lady. She also refused to debate. So the people that were holding the debates, the gubernatorial debates, were kind enough to just give me 10 minutes to talk in front of the Republican debate. And so that was kind of fun, you know, to come in with what is essentially a pure voluntarist message where I essentially, you know, come right out and attack the idea of the state on stage while standing in front of the state's own flag. That was kind of unique. And just, you know, I went off for about 7 minutes and I thought it was actually a pretty darn good speech. And, you know, the audience seemed to be relatively warm to the ideas and it was a lot of fun. The purpose of the campaign was to, as most campaigns, in my opinion, should be, is to get the ideas of liberty out. I didn't care if I was having a chance to win or not. I knew I wasn't going to have a chance. In fact, I hoped I could get 1%. I ended up getting 4%.
Hey,
wow.
And I mean, that is a huge achievement when you consider how hard the Libertarian Party works to get anything like that. And you're coming right out and you're not just saying, well, taxes are a little bit too high or maybe we should legalize this one thing.
No, I do. Like I said, it was a pure voluntarist message. And that's the point that I made, too, Tom, when I was talking about it at freekeen.com in my article later, was that look at the comparison. I put in no time, almost zero effort into this campaign. and I scored 4% in the primary. Now, let's be fair, it's not apples to apples to compare me running as a Democratic primary candidate versus a Libertarian candidate.
No, that's true, because, of course, you have the recognition, name recognition of the party. That is true.
Well, and at the same time, you know, also you never know why someone votes for you, right? So somebody could have voted for me because they hate Maggie Haston and they didn't even know me from Adam. So, you know, you never know why people cast the vote. But regardless, looking at the numbers, 4%, that's better than the average Libertarian candidate. They usually get 2 or 3% in the general. And more importantly, I spent next to zero. So the only thing I spent money on in the campaign, first of all, there was $100 I had to spend to get on the ballot. That's all you have to pay in New Hampshire to run for governor is $100 if you're running as a Republican or Democrat, which is amazing. And then I spent about $2.50 on postage responding to these inquiries. So they get, you know, if you run for political office, usually you'll start getting these questionnaires, like, you know, from different interest groups that want to know your opinions on things. So I would respond to any of the questionnaires I received, and so I sent back about, you know, 5 or 6 of those. And then any kind of invitation I got to speak that wasn't a ridiculous distance away, I did go and do that. So I gave one speech, I responded to about 5 or 6 inquiries, and I went on the radio a couple of times for interviews. So basically any media request I got, I responded to. Speeches I would do, but spend money? No, I didn't spend more than, you know, $10 during the actual campaign, and I did that well. So
yeah.
New Hampshire is a ripe place for political opportunity. It really is.
Well, look, I'd love to live anywhere where 1 out of 25 people are willing to come out and say, I want Ian Freeman. You know, that's fantastic. All right.
Yeah,
let's.
Well, I mean, I've done better, actually, in local campaigns, and other people, of course, have done even better, like, you know, Free State Project participants. Won about 15 to 20, depending on the estimates that you look at, 15 to 20 seats in the state house.
Now, yeah, I heard that.
There are 400 seats in the state house, but it wasn't the first year we had wins. I mean, 2 years ago, there were like 11 people. Before that, there were 12 people, and now there's like 15. That's more political success in a decade than the Libertarian Party has had nationwide in 40 years.
Yeah, it really does go to show something about the wisdom of the whole Free State Project approach. I've had Carla Garrick on the show. I've had Chris Cantwell on the show. I've had a number of New Hampshire people. I've had Brett Vinat from the School Sucks Project on the
show.
I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on in New Hampshire. I grew up about – what part of New Hampshire do you live – do you actually live in Keene?
Yeah, I mean, right here in downtown Keene.
Okay.
The southwest corner.
Well, I grew up but maybe about – 25 minutes from the New Hampshire border. I grew up in North Andover, Massachusetts.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, I know what I know. But I mean, look, if you leave aside the politics, it's such a beautiful place. It was a wonderful little town to grow up.
Nice.
Yeah, and I just ignore those people. I'm not going to let them ruin my life. But if I had a major thing I wanted to buy, you better believe I bought it in New Hampshire. I used to go to Canobie Lake Park as a kid. I have very, very fond memories of New Hampshire, and people have been on my back to move there. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, my wife and I have looked into it. We have looked at property there. I mean, nobody, you know, I don't think it's going to happen in the short run, at least because I'm really sick of the cold weather and I want to be in a warm place at least for a little while. And then when I get sick of that, we'll see where it goes.
I'm from Florida originally, and this is the number one objection. It was my objection when I considered the Free State Project.
All right, okay, so let's hear. How did you come to terms with it?
Well, first of all, I'm skinny. I mean, I get cold. If it's 70 degrees in my house, my feet are cold.
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't like being cold at all. But when I was really considering this, you know, there were two directions I was being pulled. One direction was, gosh, I need to be with other activists who love liberty. It seems like a no-brainer. And then the other direction was, oh, my God, it's cold. And so I realized that I didn't care how cold it would get, that, you know, they have coats and heat and, you know, warming devices and things like that. And that if I could be around people who actually cared about freedom, who were actually activists in the same vein that I was, then that would be so worth it. And it turns out it is. I mean, the warmth of the community here is amazing. A perfect example of this, Tom, I don't know how aware you are of these things, but there are these move-in parties. Have you ever heard of those?
I haven't, but I like the idea already.
So the community here is so strong, and it's been this way for years, that if you were to move up, let's say you and your family pack up a 26-foot, you know, huge U-Haul Penske moving truck, and you come up here and, you know, it took you a day and a half or 2 days to pack this truck, you let us know when you're going to be here. You know, we're arriving Saturday at noon at this location, and you'll have probably at minimum 10 and maybe dozens of people show up to unload your truck. You provide some pizza, maybe some beers to the folks for coming out, and they will just happily remove every single item from that truck, and it will be unloaded, I will guarantee you, in under an hour. I've seen it done so many times.
Unbelievable.
You want to talk about a welcoming thing? Oh, my God. What an amazing. And then, you know, after the hour's done, then you get to party with your new friends who you've never met before. And it's like coming home. It's like being with family that you didn't know you had. These are people that you connect with on a level that is just, it's unprecedented. I mean, you know kind of what this is like because you've been to New Hampshire. You've visited the Liberty Forum, the yearly convention that happens here. And you can have that connection with people like instantly. You don't have to go over the basics of liberty with these folks. You can focus on the minutiae if you want to, or whatever. And just, it's incredible. It's an amazing experience. And that's just the first experience you'll have when you arrive in New Hampshire. And then there's all these other, you know, activist opportunities that are going on. There's so much happening. There's so much happening from a social perspective. I'm far more social now than I ever was when I lived in Florida. There's just so much going on. I can't even begin to scratch the surface to even tell you about everything that's happening here.
Yeah, I know. Gosh, that's probably the best pitch I've ever heard, you jerk. I'm going to have to. Oh, darn. Because I don't know. I mean, maybe we're going to relocate at some point, and we're trying to think about what would work best. And as I said, we certainly haven't ruled out New Hampshire. I mean, there are pros and cons to everything, basically. But obviously, a big pro would be that there, as you say, there'd be a lot of people there I wouldn't have to explain myself to, you
know, uh-huh.
that I could just relax with. That was one nice thing. I lived in a residence hall at Columbia that had a lot of like-minded people when I was there in grad school, and it was nice at the end of the day to be able to sit around with people I don't have to defend myself in front of. I can just relax. I can talk about anything else under the sun. I don't have to be on the defensive all the time. And it sounds like that is the Free State Project in a social, from a social perspective, on a large scale. But let's talk about some of the things that are going on from an activist point of view. I mean, one of the things that interests a lot of people around the country is the subject of jury nullification and
yeah.
that measure that passed in New Hampshire that I understand has since been watered down. How has that actually turned out?
Okay, so there was a fairly watered down piece of legislation that went through, I think, in 2012 that it originally had said jury nullification in the text, and that was the watering down actually was done before it was passed because that was removed.
Oh, okay.
And now what happened recently this year was that the Supreme Court looked at that and they basically agreed with the state's position that this wasn't a jury nullification statute. But ultimately, whether it's because of the statute or not, people in New Hampshire have been able to talk about jury nullification in court. And prior to the statute passing, people had talked about it. Which this is a rare thing. You don't see this happening elsewhere. Like up in New York City right now, the judge in the Ross Ulbricht trial has threatened the courtroom and has told the courtroom that if the people continue their jury outreach outside, that she will be sequestering the jury and making them anonymous and, you know, just being awful.
Okay.
So in a lot of places, you can't even talk about jury nullification as a defendant or a defense attorney. But in New Hampshire, you can. And I don't know if the new Supreme Court ruling is going to change that. I don't expect that it will, but it could, I suppose. We'll keep an eye on it. And so we've actually had the people win based on jury nullification here. There was one example, and this is another good example of why the Free State Project matters, is one of the Free Staters who is an early mover, she's in her 60s, so she kind of looks like she should be on a jury. She's got that elderly lady look to her. And she made it onto a jury of a man who was accused of growing marijuana, a felony-level kind of offense. And she flipped that entire jury. They were going 11-1 against this guy, and she flipped him, and they found him not guilty, which was amazing. Now, it hasn't happened as often as we'd like. You know, it's hard to get jurors to disregard the man in the robe.
I mean, that is hard. I'm sure it's scary.
Yeah, well, right. He's sitting up real high, and he's got a bunch of men with guns who are really intimidating, and the whole courtroom process is a really intimidating process, even for a juror. So, you know, getting the word out is something we've done fairly consistently. There's an organization up here called nhjury.com where we decided to form our own jury rights outreach group. Fiji's great. They do a great job nationwide, but we wanted to customize our, you know, our brochures and things like that to be more New Hampshire specific. And so we've been doing that for many years up here, pretty much on a regular basis. At least in Keene, Grafton and Manchester have also been fairly good at doing jury outreach. But we need more people so we can do it more consistently in all 10 counties.
Well, I'll link also to nhjury.com on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/319. What about this don't take a plea deal outreach that apparently you and others have been doing? How does that work and what are you telling people?
Well, good. Good question. So if you go to don'tplea.freekeen.com, it'll take you to the actual flyer that we use. And we actually, when we put this together, we made a flyer for national. So there's actually a New Hampshire-specific flyer, and then there's another one that if someone else who's listening to this who's not in New Hampshire wanted to actually do similar outreach, you could just grab that flyer and, you know, print them out. But the basic gist of it is to stand out in front of the courthouse because they won't let us inside. Firing's been banned inside of the Cheshire County Courthouse. But stand out in front of the courthouse as people are arriving for their arraignments and hand them this information about, hey, you know, what's the plea deal process like? The average person going to court, unless they have experience in court, which is fairly rare, they're fairly intimidated by the whole process. You'll see it happening frequently where somebody will come in with sort of wide eyes and they don't know which floor the court's on. They don't know what they're doing. They've never been through this before, and they're scared to death. And so to have somebody there who's kind of a friendly face, who's giving out information that could be useful to them, is kind of a helpful thing. Like, people have complimented us on that before. But also, of course, the information is the idea of, well, essentially the plea deal is a process that empowers the state. And basically, anytime you take a plea deal, you're basically giving them the encouragement to continue doing this to people, to continue arresting peaceful people who have not harmed anyone. And of course, anybody who sits in an arraignment, wherever it is we're talking about, wherever you're sitting right now, any arraignment you go into, you'll see it's probably 80%, if not 90% of the people in that arraignment are there for nonviolent so-called crimes, these victimless crimes that as libertarians we're all so upset about. So one way to sort of fight back against those victimless crime arrests is to not take a plea, and take it to trial. Now, in New Hampshire, this strategy makes sense because in New Hampshire, when you go with not guilty and they schedule a trial, there's no court costs in New Hampshire. Now, where I'm from in Florida, you have to pay hundreds of dollars to go to court, and it doesn't matter if you've got an ordinance violation or a misdemeanor or a felony. It's hundreds of dollars, like $200-$300, to go into court, just to go to court, just to take it to trial. That's not a refundable cost. So in a lot of places, this doesn't make sense. It's pointless to not take the plea. But in New Hampshire, you can actually, and in other places, I just don't know, you know, all the 50 states' rules. But, you know, your mileage may vary. But in New Hampshire, you can not take the plea and go to trial and basically tie up their resources. You tie up their courtroom. You tie up their prosecutor. A great example of this, Tom, is Derek J. Freeman and myself and others have all taken parking tickets to court. Now, in Keene, New Hampshire, a parking ticket is a $5 ticket. So the average person is, of course, going to say, well, I'm just going to pay the $5 and get this over with, which is what most people say about all the tickets they receive.
Right.
But if 10% of the people who got parking tickets demanded their right to a trial, the system would not be able to handle it. They don't have enough courtrooms here in New Hampshire to schedule all those trials, and they would have to cancel the trials. They would have to drop the charges, and we've seen it happen. We've heard reports from average folks in Keene who have gone in, and they've challenged the parking ticket, and they have just scrapped it right there on the spot. Look, we're just not going to schedule this. And so, you know, case dismissed. With us, because we're the sort of known activists, they'll go ahead and prosecute us because they want to try to send a message or whatever, but we don't care because for us it's just more courtroom practice. I mean, it's a $5 ticket. If you get found guilty, you still owe $5. So ultimately, you know, after an hour in the courtroom where they've taken the parking enforcer off the street to come in and testify to try to get them $5 instead of going out and writing more tickets, which of course doesn't make any sense. So you're totally wasting their time. And you're wasting their resources, and that's kind of the basic idea behind not taking a plea deal.
You see,
overload the system.
I'm sitting here trying not to laugh at how awesome this is. Like, that is such a great idea that you're tying them up in a case that, even if it turns out in their favor, which it probably will, it yields them $5. It makes no sense. It's like somebody who's, they've got a bill, like you owe 3 cents, and they keep mailing you bills for the 3 cents. Like, in every single bill, they're losing money.
Right. So, and it's so funny too, because, you know, we go and record all of this. So you can go and watch on the Freekeem YouTube channel. I mean, if you're really into this, you can go and watch the full trials of these parking tickets. And I've done one. I did a $10 parking ticket once, Tom. It was in Concord where they're $10. And so, you know, this is how crazy we are as activists, right? Like, the average person is not going to do this because it cost me more than $10 just to drive to Concord and go to this trial. But that's the level of principle that we have at work here in New Hampshire. So I went to Concord. This trial took 2 hours to get to. So, you know, they've always got these other cases, and a lot of times they'll call us last because we don't stand for the judge around here. And so they don't want the average folks in the courtroom to see us not standing for the judge. So they, a lot of times, will call the case last. So we're sitting there waiting, and the parking enforcer's sitting there the whole time. And so when I got the parking enforcer on the stand, I asked her, I said, are you on the job right now? Are you getting paid? Because a lot of times the cops will get paid overtime to do a trial. So really what I was wondering was whether she was getting overtime or not. And she says, I'm not getting overtime. I am on the time clock. So she was at her regular jobly duties.
Okay.
So my next question was, well, had you been out on the streets instead of sitting in this courtroom, how many tickets would you have written by now? And she said, I would probably write about 20 an hour or something like that, or maybe it was 20 total. But either way, it was a lot of damn tickets you could have written had she not been sitting in the court trying to, you know, get $10 out of me. And the real kicker, Tom, is after I was found guilty, I sent a motion to the court asking for alternative payment because I have an objection to paying fines to the state. I just will not do it. And I'll do whatever, anything else besides pay money into the state. I do not want to encourage them. So I will do community service or I'll sit in jail. I don't care. And, you know, I let the judges know this, and ultimately, you know, they let me do the community service. And so as an alternative to doing community service, I've had judges approve me cutting a check to a local charity. And this judge, he wouldn't approve it in court, but silently, you know, when no one else was watching, when I sent him a motion, he did approve it. So I cut a $10 check to the local food bank, sent a receipt of that to the court, and case was closed.
They didn't
even get the 10 bucks out of me.
I just love this. This is a world that I guess I'm just not plugged into. Like, I don't even know this stuff is going on, and I can't tell you how happy I am to know that it is going on. Tell us about Robin Hooding. I think this is something people know more about because it's gotten some media attention, but not everybody. What's the idea of Robin Hooding?
Yeah, this has gotten international media attention, so a quick Google of Keen Robin Hood will find all kinds of news stories.
And Keen, by the way, we're talking K-E-E-N-E.
That's correct. And so for years, there have been people doing this Robin Hooding. It started back in 2009 with an early mover for the Free State Project named Lauren Canario. And she got the idea in her head to go and fill parking meters. This isn't an original idea. I mean, people have done this forever. In Keene, we have the old school meters, you know, like you drop a quarter in, time comes up, that kind of thing. Not one of these fancy kiosk systems that you see in big cities. So she would go and drop a quarter in, and then she'd leave an envelope on the person's dashboard, letting them know that they'd been saved from getting a ticket. And over the years, different activists kind of picked up the ball and ran with it. And in 2013, James Cleveland moved to town from Georgia. And what's cool about the Free State Project, we've always got these new people moving in constantly, and they're bringing fresh ideas to the table. And James kind of took the idea of Robin Hooding, and he took it to the next level. He got more organized. He got more people involved to do it sort of at the same time. And he got better tools. So rather than an envelope with a note in it, he had nice-looking business cards, glossy, full-color, printed up with, like, a picture of Disney's Robin Hood, which, of course, we didn't ask permission for, on one side. And then on the other side, it says something like, you've been saved from the king's tariff. And then if you want to donate to us, here's the address, that kind of thing. And so then we went around and started putting these things out. And more specifically, targeting the parking enforcer. There were only three in Keene at the time, and usually no more than one or two out at any given moment. So we'd find the parking enforcer and then walk in front of the enforcer, thereby preventing the enforcer from writing any tickets whatsoever when the Robin Hooder was nearby. And so, as you might imagine, after several months of this, the city of Keene was fairly upset because they had been essentially prevented from writing thousands of tickets in that time frame, and that's in a small city like Keene, where there's a population of 25,000, they only write 29,000 tickets a year. I mean, that's a lot, but still, compared to New York City, obviously, it's nothing. And so, you know, if you knock 5,000 off of 25,000 or whatever, then they're going to take notice of that. And so they filed a lawsuit against us in civil court in May, demanding that the courts create a buffer zone, a 50-foot radius around each of the parking enforcers that would protect them from the existence of the Robin Hooders, as well as our video cameras and us talking to them. They claimed that we were harassing, threatening, and intimidating the parking enforcers, which, of course, is nonsense. Now, it's certainly true that some of the Robin Hooders, including myself, have given the parking enforcers a piece of our mind, but talking to a government bureaucrat and telling them things they don't like is by definition not harassment. Because they work for the government, they have to listen to what people say. They have, at the very least, have to tolerate it. And so the claims were ridiculous, but the claims also did what they were intended to do, which was to sort of drag us through the mud, to make us look like thugs, to make us look bad, because, you know, in a small town, word travels fast, and there are a lot of people who work for the government. You know, they have friends or family who work for the government in this town. So there's a certain group of people who believes everything the state says, and so when the city manager says we're threatening, harassing, and intimidating people, there's a certain segment of the population who believes that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. As a matter of fact, not long ago, I was at the post office, and I'm in line with my kids, and somehow, the subject of government and inefficiency and everything came up, and I was just telling them, I was giving them a pretty good little exposition of some of our views on things, and the woman in front of me obviously was a government employee. Like, no normal person responds the way she responded. Like, she turned around, she was indignant that I was telling my kids truthful things about the government. And I, as politely as I could, just shot right back at her, challenged her to debate me on anything I had said, and she shut her mouth. But I guarantee you she works for the government, and you're right, there is this constituency out there that is going to rally to the besieged government employee who has to deal with unhappy people. Now, on the other hand, couldn't you say that even a private owner of a street is going to have parking regulations and maybe even fines? So your argument would be that the state, though, has a different moral status from a private owner, and I don't like what it does with the money.
Well, I've had a note left on my car when I parked in a lot that apparently you weren't supposed to park in, but I didn't know that. It was a private lot in Concord. And when I came back to my car, there was a note there, like a sticky on the windshield that said, hey, if you do this again, you're dead and towed. And I didn't do it again after that. But, you know, the state, they're going to tow you a lot faster in a lot of places. And, you know, regardless of what would happen in the private market, maybe all the parking meters would still be there in the private market, though I doubt it, because there are towns in New Hampshire that don't have parking meters and everything's fine downtown. So it seems more like a money-raising revenue source to me than anything else. And there's a perfect example of this, because in Keene, the big claim for the existence of these meters is that, well, we need turnover. We need to have the cars move in so business can be happy. We're doing this for the business owners. And, well, wait a minute. If that's true, if turnover is so important, then why, during the busiest shopping week of the year, the Christmas shopping week, does the city of Keene take a week off from enforcing the meters? If it's really true that it's all about turnover, wouldn't it be the most important to enforce on the busiest shopping week of the year? But no, they take the entire week off, and you know what? Everything's totally fine. Now, they still enforce the two-hour limit, but they don't enforce the actual meter times during that week. So I think that that's an argument against the existence of it anyway. But regardless of what would happen in the absence of it, people hate getting parking tickets, and the real purpose of Robin Hooding is to brighten someone's day. Nothing feels worse. Or I guess there are some things that could feel worse, but it feels pretty bad.
Yeah, right.
You come out of a business in downtown, and as you're approaching your car, you see that horrible orange thing on your windshield. You know exactly what you're coming to get, and it's just, you get that sinking feeling in the pit of your stomach. Well, we can help people feel better, because when they come and they get a note from Robin Hood, it lets them know that they would have gotten one of those orange envelopes, but we, in point of fact, saved them from that experience.
Hey, and by the way, have you ever gotten, do people ever kind of, do they make donations? Do they, in a great while, yeah?
Sure. We've had people send checks. We've had them hand us money in the streets. We've had them drop by the Keene Activist Center here and just hand cash to us, bring quarters, bring nickels. So, yeah, that absolutely happened.
Oh, that's nice. That is nice.
Because, just to riff on that for a moment, there are certain people who find this to be very controversial behavior, not just because of the allegations of threatening, intimidating, and harassing, but just, you know, there's this group of people who hate everything the activists do in Keene. And for lack of a better term, we'll just call them haters. They're the kind of people who, like you encountered at that that office, where they don't want to talk about the ideas. They just want to talk about how much they hate you. And so the fact that these people exist scares a lot of libertarians who are watching this from afar. They're watching on Facebook or on freekeen.com. And, you know, the response from the libertarians is like, you guys are doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. Look at all these people who hate you. Well, wait a minute. There's a lot of people who like us as well. And sure, for everybody that drives by the house here and, you know, lays on their horn and flips us the bird or, you know, is very rude, there are as many people who wave and they smile and they appreciate us and they give donations or they'll stop by to talk. There's a local business here in town that's being run by libertarians now called 101 Deals. It's a thrift store. They've had people come in to specifically tell them thank you for being, you know, active here. Thank you for doing what you're doing. And so, you know, if we were out on the streets and everyone hated what we were doing, it would be pretty obvious. But when we're out on the streets doing this stuff, we get a lot of positive feedback from folks. And I think what libertarians don't understand, and that we show real clear here in Keene, for better or for worse, it makes people uncomfortable, but look, libertarians, if you ever do start making an impact where you are, like we're doing in New Hampshire, people are going to hate you. It's something that it's just inevitable. If you are a threat to the status quo, they're going to hate you. In fact, they may even get violent with you at some point. I mean, we've had Robin Hooders threatened on the streets and physically attacked before. That's how serious this situation is. Now, at least they're not lynching us and, you know, burning crosses in our yards at this point. So all things considered, it could be a lot worse. But libertarians historically have been ineffective. They've got no more than 2 or 3% in any given election. Up here, we're winning elections, and that's one of the reasons why. And then, you know, we've got all this other stuff like Robin Hooding, which is a direct strike at the heart of authoritarianism. It shouldn't be a surprise when people strike out against you and when they get angry. That's what happens when you actually threaten the status quo. And if libertarians anywhere start actually having the success we have in New Hampshire, they will also get the same pushback.
Exactly.
And
you know, Ian, I am so glad you said that, because I have to deal with I've had to deal with these sorts of people for a long time. When
the libertarian second guessers or the haters?
Both. Yeah. I mean, because I think one bleeds into the other half the time.
Because
a lot of times there are envious libertarians, like the DC ones, who for years and years have blown billions of dollars. Oh, if I write just one more policy report that the government will throw in the garbage, maybe that will advance us toward liberty. And then they see all these unorganized young people who are blowing past them in terms of notoriety, in terms of accomplishment, in terms of spreading the ideas. It drives them insane. So all they have left is, well, you're not doing it right because some fancy people I'd like to have cocktails with look down on you. Yeah, but the fact that those people want to have cocktails with you means you're a loser. Means you are no threat to them whatsoever. And of course, Ron Paul's an example of this. I mean, there are politicians who have been attacked and criticized, but nobody has been smeared to the extent that he was, because by telling truths about war, about terrorism, all sorts of truths, the Federal Reserve, that are not supposed to be uttered, you are breaking every rule in the book and you're going to be smeared. And yet, who basically lit the fire under more people than this guy who refused to be the quote-unquote respectable and responsible and reasonable libertarians? You know, you can roll all those people up in a ball and toss them away and you won't even notice.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, freekeen.com is a place where a lot of this stuff gets reported on. And we've made headlines not just for the Robin Hooding thing, and that, by the way, has gone to the Supreme Court. We are still waiting the ruling on that because the city lost their case, by the way. I told you about how they wanted to create that 50-foot buffer zone. They failed at the superior court level. That case got dismissed. We got a great attorney who's like a real free speech guy who stepped up to take the case pro bono, and he's done an awesome job. So we're still waiting to see what the New Hampshire Supreme Court says on that, and of course we'll have the details on it at freekeen.com. But there was something else that was interesting that happened a couple of years ago that's sort of related to this. There was a state representative, and she still is a state rep. Her name's Cynthia Chase.
Oh, I made a YouTube about her. Yeah.
Yeah, so Cynthia Chase, you know, she's in Keene, and the reason why she has the opinion she has is likely because she's witnessed, you know, some of the activism that's gone on here, and also what's happened in Concord, where, you know, free staters are actually in office. And she said, as you know, that free staters are the single greatest threat to the state. Now, you want to talk about a badge of honor.
Yeah. Boy,
what a wonderful thing.
At least she understands what you're about.
Right. She's not the only one who's sort of in the state who has said something like that. And ask yourself, has the Libertarian Party in your state ever been acknowledged in any similar fashion? Of course not.
Yeah, well, I mean, the question answers itself. So, listen, Ian, I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed talking to you today, man. Obviously, I'll have to have you back because we've just scratched the surface. There's so many other topics we could hit, and we're already, at double the length of most of my shows, and I haven't even noticed the time flying by. So, I really appreciate it. I want to make sure people check you guys out. Certainly, freetalklive.com is one site. Free Keene, again, K-E-E-N-E, freekeene.com, which you started back in, I guess, 2006. And everything else we talked about, I'm going to put at tomwoods.com/319. All the different links that we've talked about, I'll make sure that's the clearinghouse for those.
It's been a blast. It's been a pleasure. And yeah, definitely anytime you want to talk about what's going on up here, I'm happy to chat.
Great. All right. Well, give my best to Mark Edge, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Very good, Tom. Thank you, sir.
All right, everybody. If you haven't checked out my new and improved show notes pages, today would be a good day to start because of everything we talked about on this episode. TomWoods.com/319 is where to go, and get the list of the entire run of episodes at TomWoods.com/episodes. We do this show Monday through Friday, so make sure and subscribe via iTunes or Stitcher, which you can do over at TomWoods.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
The Tom Woods Show.